This edition of Rock is Red is sponsored by Native Vines Winery, a different kind of wine country. Welcome to a different kind of wine country. Native Vines Winery is located in Lexington, North Carolina, and offers a unique line of vinifera wines as well as sweet fruit and specialty wines. Come by the winery, enjoy the grounds, taste the wine, and stay a while. Native Vines Winery, the first American Indian-owned and operated winery in the United States. A different kind of wine country located at 1336 North NC Highway 150, Lexington, North Carolina 27295. Or visit us online at nativevineswinery.com. You're listening to rockwired.com, online radio that rocks. From Rockwired Sound in Albuquerque, New Mexico, of all places, this is Rock is Red, American Indian and First Nations music exclusively at rockwired.com. Today, Rock is Red gives it up for Aragon Starr, the creator of the comic book Super Indian. Stick around for more. Rock is Red is powered by Rockwired Media, LLC. A limited liability company. Please stand by. Welcome to the latest edition of Rock is Red, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and the music is out there. But today, instead of music, we bring you a comic book. That's right. Today, we're profiling Aragon Starr, the creator of the comic book series Super Indian. Rockwired had a chance to speak with Aragon regarding the creation of Super Indian, and you'll be hearing that interview in just a few minutes. But first, a clip of Super Indian.
Super Indian!
Super Indian! Kamad Bod. 7 years ago, in a mysterious government lab, Dr. Eaton Crow perfects his food experiment.
Extraordinary! One drop of resium transforms an ordinary block of cheese into a superfood! Must start human trials, deliver my findings, then the Nobel Prize! Handcuffs? What the... Who are you?
I'm Agent 49, Dr. Crow, and there won't be any prizes where you're going.
My findings! My cheese!
Behold the origins of our hero, Super Indian! Moments later, a janitor cleans Dr. Crow's hastily vacated laboratory.
Why, this cheese can go back into shipment. Kamaj don't grow on trees.
2 weeks later, on the Leaning Oak Reservation, Mick Logan, his son Hubert, and Hubert's best friend, General Bear, attend Derek Thunder's 13th birthday party.
Here you go, Derek. Happy birthday.
What did you bring me, Hubert? Oh, Dad, look. Commodity cheese.
Mm-hmm. Helps build Kamad Bod's 12 way, son. Derek, did you forget to say something?
Thank you, Mr. Logan.
Yeah, sure thing.
Uh-huh. Hubert.
Hey, Derek, I challenge you to a cheese-eating contest.
Okay. I'm not hungry, you guys.
Good, General Bear. You could skip a meal. Hubert, ready, set, go! My puppy Sneakers is so dumb, he'll eat anything. Here, boy, here.
Derek, this cheese tastes funny. Dad, I feel weird.
Shah, son, you're glowing. Hank, let's get these boys to IHS right away.
Boys, give me the rest of that cheese. I'm taking it straight to the dump.
Mick Logan rushes Hubert to Dr. Eaton Crow's clinic for examination.
Ow. Are you a real doctor?
Hubert!
It's okay, Mr. Logan. I have friends in high places that make sure I stay at the bottom of the totem pole. Okay. Mr. Logan, did anyone else eat the cheese?
Well, Dr. Crow, that Derek Thunder kid is out here blowing like a firefly!
Thank you, Nurse Jane. Mr. Logan, I must tend to Derek. I'll keep both boys overnight for observation.
Thank you, Doc.
Later that evening, a wide-eyed Hubert shares a hospital room with Derek Thunder.
Gee, Derek, I wish I could glow like that.
Eight more cheese than you, loser. I want more. I'm busting out through this window.
But, Derek, the doctor said...
Huh? What's going on outside?
Dr. Crow, you're surrounded. This is Agent 49. You can't hide on my reservation. Turn yourself in. What's with that glowing kid? He's lifting the police cruiser off the ground. Stop!
You'll never take me alive, copper.
Derek, they want me, not you. Don't hurt anyone.
Your little friends can't hurt me.
Agent 49... This boy is full of resium.
Dr. Crow, nobody escapes Area 51 on my watch. My little boy, General Bear, could have eaten that free cheese.
You're General Bear's dad? Oh, that stupid lump of goo.
Kid, I never miss.
I surrender, Agent 49. Derek, drop that Crown Victoria. Come with me. You'll love Area 51. The cheese is out of this world.
Cheese? Now you're talking.
Let's box those two up and ship them off to Dreamland.
The next morning at the home of Hubert Logan.
Hi, Tilly.
Hi, Hubert. Brought you something.
More cheese?
No, Derek's puppy Snickers. He looks like C-3PO. See you, Hubert.
But Tilly... Ew, you're stinky. Now I'll call you what we call all res dogs, D-O-G.
Whatever you do, young man, don't call me late for dinner.
Did you just... Mom! Tilly gave me a talking dog!
And the first installment of Super Indian ends with a beginning. Tune in next time for more Super Indian!
Super Indian!
A Native Voices at the Autry production.
That was the first ever episode of Super Indian, which was available on NPR a few years back. And for more on Super Indian, check out the official website, www.superindiancomics.com. Rockwired had a chance to speak with the creator of Super Indian Comics, Aragon Starr, and here's how the interview went.
So tell me, what was your inspiration for creating Super Indian? I mean, what was the, you know, what sort of got this whole thing going for you?
Well, the whole thing started back in, I'm going to say, 2006 or 2005, and it was just a funny conversation I had with some theater people I was working with, and I, you know, they saw me sketching, because I've always sketched, and I've always done comics in my spare time, you know, just for fun and amusement, and they saw me drawing. I said, wouldn't it be cool if there was a Native superhero? And we just laughed, because... You know, I always come at things from the funny, humorous side of life rather than like, and he's going to be dark, and he's going to avenge his parents. And it's like, no. I mean, there might be elements of that in other characters, but I thought something fun and lighthearted, and speaking of, you know, he's going to avenge his parents, I actually was inspired by the Batman TV series of the 60s, more so than The Dark Knight.
I see.
That and Spider-Man and the X-Men and all of these different kind of comics, you know, before they were movie franchises, you know, they were actual, you know, print on paper stuff. And that just, I said, Native people are never in sort of in that landscape except very stereotypically. So I thought, well, okay, if I'm going to do something humorous, it might as well come from what I know, people I know, the way I grew up. And that's why I just came up with Super Indian, because it just needed to happen.
And how did it go from some renderings in a tablet to something that, you know, you thought, oh, well, I could sell this? when did that happen? I mean, when did you realize this was more than just a crazy idea? This was something that could really have arms and legs.
Well, the thing that really sold me on it was when we did the series as a radio program. It was audio theater, and the first time we did it was in West Plains, Missouri at a theater conference. And basically what they did was they have this thing every year. It's in West Plains, Missouri. It's a national audio theater festival. and they invited a bunch of Native people to come down there and be part of it and learn how to do radio theater, because that's a whole other different bag than, say, straight theaters or play like that. You know, you have to use the imagination of your mind and your voice to tell a story. So, script for Super Indian, and from that, it was broadcast live on NPR, of all places, and it was a people really liked it. They loved the humor, and I thought, well, gosh, this is just making me laugh as much as and everybody else is enjoying it as much as I am, so I thought, okay, fine. So we went and actually made more episodes. There were 10 of them altogether. And after the thing was done, said and done and broadcast, I was like, well, what am I going to do with it now? Because I still had ideas, and I kind of wanted to see it be, you know, print on paper or something. So I started going to Comic-Cons and just, because I did that when I was a kid, but that was back in the day, and it's different when you're a fan, but when you want to go and get information, there are a lot of professionals at these conventions that will sit and they'll talk about themselves, their work, how they did this, how they did that. They'll evaluate your own work if you ask nicely. And a lot of people said, well, we like this idea, but it's kind of a niche market. So I don't know if I'd run out and, you know, print, you know, 1,000 books right away, build an audience online. So it started as an online series in April of 2011, and it was a webcomic. I basically did your standard 11 by 17 page shrunk down to the right comic book size, and I revealed half of the page for week one and the second half of the page for week two. And by the end of, you know, however months it was, I was like, I have a 23 page story. So I just kept going, you know. And after amassing enough, you know, comics, I said, well, maybe I should try it. I showed it to enough people, and especially Indian people got really excited about it. So I said, okay, I'm just going to put my toe in the water. And I only printed up maybe about 300 copies just to see. And I've sold all of them. And, in fact, if you have one of the original 300, like, that's something really special.
Yes. And for those listening who probably aren't familiar with the comics, sort of set the scene for us. Well, what's the story of Super Indian? What's his, you know?
Oh, okay. Well, you know, the elevator speech has always been he ate tainted commodity cheese and got superpowers. And, and that just is like paints a picture for you of how silly this is, and how, you know, how does this young kid who works as a, you know, bingo hall janitor by day and then developing superpowers at night, how does he deal with this? And what sort of dangers come to the Leaning Oak Reservation? So in the radio series, you'll hear that he has his super evil villain nemesis, Wampum Bags, who basically was a high school teacher that was more interested in Native culture than the kids he was teaching. And he kind of learned everything from the medicine woman and finally said, you know what? If y'all aren't going to use this, I'm going to use it. And he took a powerful wampum belt and just set himself up. And he's determined to destroy the reservation just cause. You know, it's just like, you people aren't into it, so.
Well, I've known a few vultures like that up around Santa Fe Indian Market, so I got to applaud you on that, villain. You really did your homework, but
indeed I did. I love him. He's like he's Swedish, and his
perfect
Jorgen Storm. Yes. So, you know, and the villains also come from the reservation. They're the own Indian people versus Indian people. Like Derek Thunder was at a birthday party with Hubert Logan, who is the alter ego to Super Indian. And basically they both ate the tainted cheese. And Derek took the dark path instead of, you know, wanting to be a hero or stay on the reservation. He's just, you know, just one of those self-hating Indians. Oh, my God. Like I was when I was a kid. I admit it. I was like, could I be something else? Could I please be something else? But it was not possible. Yeah, I mean, I tell people that they can't believe it because I'm just so in, you know, I'm in this culture and in the world. And it's like, no, not when I was a kid. I would have rather have been, you know, a pasty, white-faced English punk rocker than, you know what, going to powwow. I admit it.
I also understand you have a strong playwriting background. So talk about how you got into that. That seems to have informed a lot of this stuff with Super Indian. Talk about your beginnings as a playwright.
I will. You know, what's funny about this whole business with being a playwright, it started with one of the trustees of Native Voices at the Autry was a friend of mine from another organization called First Americans in the Arts. Marjorie Tannen, I think she was from Santa Clara Pueblo. She came to one of my coffee house shows when I was doing my, you know, coffee house, here's my songs about Native America with me and my acoustic guitar. And she said, you know, you're really good on stage, and what they need over at Native Voices is somebody that knows how to talk to an audience. A lot of people don't know how to do that. They get self-conscious, and then it doesn't help you as an actor. And I was like, okay. She said, no, really, go audition. I said, I am not an actor. I acted in high school, you know, and I dropped it from there because I said there's just no chance for somebody that doesn't look, you know, all Pocahontas-y. You know, I don't have that look that casting directors are looking for. So I was like, yeah, right. So I went in and auditioned just for a laugh. And they really liked what I did. But it took them about a year to find something that would, you know, suit me and what they considered my talents to be. So I actually came up through Native Voices and as an actor. And it wasn't until my manager, Janet Miner, said, well, I love that you're acting, but you know what? People that see you as an actor do not know that you are also a really good musician with all of this, you know, touring experience and 4 CDs. They have no idea. And I said, okay. She says, what if you developed a show where you can showcase your acting and your music? And I was like, I think that should be done. So basically that whole playwriting thing came from writing The Red Road, which is the story of a crazy day at a Native truck stop / diner in Sepulpa, Oklahoma, back in the 70s. So I wrote this play, and I was mentored by Native Voices at the Autry, and again, another fellow named William Partland, who was a professor at ASU in theater, basically said, you know, this kind of reminds me of August Wilson. And I don't know if you guys, your audience would know of August Wilson, but...
Yeah, the play. I know the playwright, yeah. What did he write? He wrote called?
Fences.
Fences, and there's the one about the piano lesson.
Yes.
That one, okay, yeah.
Exactly. So, in any case, the reason he said remind me of August, he said, I actually worked with August, and he said, you're coming at your plays in a way that I hope, and again, this is my big dream for myself as a playwright, is to do a 10-play cycle like August Wilson did and take different pieces of history from each of the decades of the 1900s and write a play about that with Native people, featuring a Native story. So The Red Road is my 70s. Play as anything. So that's how I started, and it basically developed from an idea about a Native American truck driver. You know, what kind of life would that be like, and where would he live? And then, of course, you know, because I'm from Oklahoma, that's why I said, well, I'll just write about the people that I know. You know, my aunties and my cousins and all my crazy friends, and you know, there's all kinds of stuff in there. So Red Road became a musical comedy, and I played 11 different characters in the show, and from, you know, old men to old women to kids to, and again, I'm talking the English punk rocker came to life. I finally got to do that character. His name was Danny Dacron, man, and he was just, oh, I love Indians, man. Oh, man, I love doing that character. He had a song that Danny Dacron sang in the show was called I Want to See America with Indian Eyes, you know? He It's just so silly. And then there's some crazy activists in there, but the whole thing is based on the friendship of these two women, the one that runs the cafe and then her famous country music friend who happens to, like, she's kind of a Grand Ole Opry kind of star, like, say, Loretta Lynn or somebody like that, who comes in and says, I'm going to film my TV show at the cafe, you know? And it just goes on from there. It's just all of the crazy stuff that's been running through my life. Like, there's a kid that loves the Beatles, and there's one that loves Star Trek. And then there's the bingo grandma and the old Navajo fry cook and just everybody.
sounds like a what's her name, a Tracy Ullman thing, almost.
It is like very Tracy Ullman. And I had so much fun doing that. I mean, the play eventually, you know, we did it in Los Angeles. It was performed in New York City, Washington, D.C. It toured in Australia. It's played in Tulsa. It was eventually, again, like our Super Indian turned into a radio play. So there's that on PRX as well, that my friend Dirk Maggs, who's a producer at BBC Radio, said, yeah, let's turn that into a radio play. And it turned out really good. I'm just happy with what he did.
And going back to Super Indian, I mean, when you present this thing at conventions, you know, what's usually the response from, like, a white audience, you know, or white, you know, convention goers when they see you?
Well, I would say that the younger folks are really into it. I get a lot of great feedback from them saying, you know, thanks for letting us into your world and kind of learning a little bit about contemporary Native people, and that, I think, is really exciting. Some of the older folks are a little like, yeah, you know, there's still that kind of sexism in the industry of, like, you know, women can't do comics and, you know, that kind of yucky stuff. And when you add on being Native, it's like, oh, please. You know, they just don't know what to make of it. And, you know, you just kind of have to say, well, you know, thank you for stopping by the booth. I'm sure I'm going to encounter that the next week or so, because I'm going to be doing the WonderCon convention here in Los Angeles, and that's always kind of really interesting. But, of course, you know, it's much like a powwow, and that you're going to get, especially in L.A., all of the nuts and chews, you know, like, yes, I was Indian in a past life, and, you know, all that kind of stuff, the crazy stuff that we always hear as Native people. It's like, come on. You know, the great, you know, grandmother's a Cherokee princess.
Oh, the great grandmother was a slut. I mean, really,
yeah.
She got.
What happened was.
I mean, good yeah. Lord, it's always the grandmother. It's,
exactly.
It's never the mother. It's never, you know.
Never. Oh, no.
It couldn't be the mother. You know, that's too easy to trace.
Exactly.
But. Yeah, my grandma always thought there must have been one very fertile Cherokee woman of that generation just going around. Giving it up for every Tom, Dick, and Harry. But anyway, back to... We're not NPR, it's okay. But talk about the reaction from Native people to this comic.
Well, you know, I think sometimes you just kind of go, I have not had any really negative reactions except from some kind of Indian guys that are just like, well, why don't you write about something that's real, like, you know, the struggle, and that kind of stuff, which is like, well, you know, I'll leave that to somebody else, because, you know, when
why don't they do it, you know, I mean,
exactly, it's like, if you want to write about the struggle, please, you know, but I say, when you're doing stuff like that, you're living in it, and that you can be in a really dark place for a long time, and I prefer not to be there. Prefer to do something fun and lighthearted, especially that kids and their parents can read together. Because I know that there's also a, like, you know, why don't you do something more, you know, PG-13 or, you know, something a little more adult. And I thought, I just don't want to go there. There's other people that can do that. There just isn't enough stuff for kids There just isn't. And I, you know, I never thought I would feel that way about art and things, you know, because I like The Walking Dead and I like those kind of things. But, you know, it's like, no, I can't do that. I mean, I don't want to do that. So, you know, but I think one of my favorite reactions recently, there was a little girl who saw the cover of the book and said, "Oh my gosh, that's me. That looks like, that person looks like me." And I think that is like the best kind of reaction you can get, is like when Indian people open up this book and they just start laughing because it's like, ah, there's my grandma, ah, my aunties, ah, that's my cousin. You know, that I have, you know, fulfilled my goal if that happens, I think.
And what's on the horizon for Super Indian? Where are you going to take this thing to next?
Well, Volume 3 is being drawn and written as we speak, and I'm also going to be part of an exhibit that's opening in July at the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture in Santa Fe. So that's going to be like kind of a pop culture thing. I know that there are other comic artists that are going to be involved with it as well, and it's a little bit different than the thing I did at the Heard Museum last year. But that was really a good feature for me, and I was really, super pleased at how the Herd promoted Super Indian in Phoenix.
For more on Super Indian, check out the official website, www.superindiancomics.com. And here is the third episode of Super Indian.
Super Indian.
Super Indian. Technoskin. 5 years later, our hero, Hubert Logan, has become a strong young man.
Yeah, I'm glad nobody knows I'm Super Indian. They'd make me clean up the whole Leaning Oak Reservation. No, I'm just nerdy Hubert, sweeping the bingo hall.
As Hubert works inside, outside a massive metallic Indian man emerges from a gray cloud of mist.
Yep. Tori, calm down. Mommy's gonna touch. Message. Big metal guy, 12 o'clock.
You summoned me, Priscilla Yellowshirt.
Huh?
Spawn of Chief Jerry Yellowshirt. Abandon your tradition.
Yeah. Leaning Oak is way too resi. Who are you?
They call me Technoskin, the Destroyer.
Ah.
Yes, it's another exciting episode of Super Indian. Hubert's Uncle Chester calls him at the first sign of danger.
Hello?
Hubert, it's Uncle Chester.
Huh?
There's a huge metal Indian robot outside the bingo hall. Huh? He's up to no good.
Near Area 51, Derek Thunder and Wampum Bags fight over control of their evil joystick.
I am Technoskin, the Destroyer.
Derek, give me the controller.
Wampum, it's my turn. I make him talk, you make him move.
Derek, you may have built Technoskin, but my Wampum belt powers him.
Just one transmogrifying blast gives the Leaning Oak slobs an extreme makeover.
They become our subservient zombies.
At the bingo hall, the 50-foot-tall robot Technoskin takes aim at bingo hall patrons.
Gone are the ribbon shirts, the reservation mullets, conformity good, native culture bad.
Oh, who turned our people into Walmart mannequins? I better find Super Indian.
Technoskin, make General Bear look like a rodeo clown.
With pleasure.
Hey, I'm a clown.
General Bear, what happened?
Hey, let go of me. Who are you?
I'm Super Indian. You're supposed to be my sidekick. Wait a minute. Everyone's in fashionable clothes. Memory loss? Zombies? Must get Dioji to help me. People, stay back.
Oh, who are you with your long flowing hair and buff-tacular six-pack?
I am your reservation superhero, Super Indian.
Oh, well, that totally explains the type.
Must zap Priscilla Yellowshirt and her little dog, too.
What the heck? Oh, save me. I'm too pretty to transmogrify.
Get your metal claws off her, you talking tin can.
Meet my little friend, Super Indian.
Hmm. Technoskin sounded like Derek Thunder for a minute.
Super Indian, a wireless emitter is embedded in Technoskin's left heel.
Wireless emitter left heel. Thanks, DOG. Technoskin, time for you to go on a trip. Wow, everyone looks Rezzy again.
Meanwhile, at the evil lair, Derek and Wampum stare at a static-filled monitor.
What's with the reception?
Oh, you fool! The wireless receiver is destroyed. Oh, your Indian butt is useless.
Shut your pie hole, old man. What? Why can't you zap people without Wi-Fi?
Zap this! You love the fifth dimension!
As Derek Thunder fades into the fifth dimension, things settle down at the bingo hall.
Super Indian, my hero! Denying my tribal identity was a lame idea.
Miss Yellowshirt, may I say you look great in Chanel.
This old thing? It's my mom's. Does that, like, make it traditional?
Only if you're Jackie O.
Tune in next time for more Super Indian!
Super Indian!
A Native Voices at the Autry production.
That's going to do it for this edition of Rock is Red. A special thanks goes out to Aragon Star for her time and, more importantly, her conversation. For Rockwired, I'm Brian Lush, and remember, keep your eyes forward, never look back, and make it up as you go. Rock is Red is powered by Rockwired Media LLC, a limited liability company, and is available exclusively at rockwired.com. Online radio that rocks.